Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The saga of controversial Arizona immigration law SB 1070 keeps unspooling. After key parts of the law were blocked by a federal judge, the state's governor has quickly appealed, and the case could make it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Today we're looking at the legal arguments involved and mapping out what comes next. This hour on Point, the Arizona immigration law and the legal way forward. And a special welcome today to our newest listeners on 88.9 WEKU in Richmond and Lexington, Kentucky. We look forward to hearing from all of you. It's nice to have you on board. Joining me first this hour from Phoenix, Arizona, is Daniel Gonzalez. He's immigration reporter for the Arizona Republic. Daniel Gonzalez, welcome to you.
Hi, Jane.
Tell us the public reaction in Arizona to the district judge's decision to block parts of the controversial immigration law.
Well, it's been a very divided reaction. Obviously, the opponents of the law were somewhat relieved that the judge decided to enjoin some of the main parts of the law, but they weren't completely satisfied. They feel like the law is still going forward, parts of the law at least, and they still have a court battle ahead. And then I think on the other side, the supporters of the law are frustrated and angry that the law that was supposed to take effect on Thursday is now been put on hold.
The federal judge who issued the injunction has received death threats. There have been demonstrations that we've read about. Seems this issue is becoming even more heated as time passes.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, this is an issue that's been going on in Arizona for many, many years. And I think folks who support this law thought it was going to provide some kind of solution. Now it's just going to continue to go on in the courts. And we're still really at where we were before the law took effect. There's a lot of frustration and a lot of polarization, a lot of divisiveness going on in Arizona right now.
Arizona Governor Jan Brewer says the state will appeal this latest ruling. What is the timetable for that?
Well, she asked for an expedited appeal, and she was hoping that it would be heard in September, but I believe that expedited appeal has been denied, so it looks like it's going to be heard sometime in November.
And so she's also called for top legislative leaders to broach the possibility of changing provisions of this law. What's the possibility of that happening?
Well, I think they'll probably move forward with that. And I think what they're hoping is that by tweaking the law, they may be able to satisfy some of these legal challenges in court, and that would allow some of the main parts of the law to go forward.
How is law enforcement reacting, Daniel, to this? I'm reading the controversial sheriff of Maricopa County, Joe Arpaio, said he's moving forward with, quote, crime suppression sweeps today, and that the federal injunction will have absolutely no impact on his deputies. How is this playing on the ground with law enforcement?
Well, just like the public, law enforcement in Arizona is divided. There are some law enforcement officials who felt that this was a bad law. They felt like this was going to be a law that was going to drain their resources. It was going to force their officers to be involved with immigration matters and take away from their duties, public safety duties in fighting crime. And there were other law enforcement officials who were very much in favor of this law, who felt that it was going to give them some additional tools to battle illegal immigration. So it's really been divided. Sheriff Arpaio has been conducting these crime suppression operations for about 2 years now. And they've been effective in the sense that they bring a lot of attention to the issue. And he has arrested a number of people, but they're also highly, highly controversial because there's folks who feel that he's just going into neighborhoods and harassing Hispanic people looking for illegal immigrations, regardless of whether they're illegal or not.
Well, Daniel Gonzalez, I appreciate your view from the ground. Daniel Gonzalez, immigration reporter for the Arizona Republic. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you for having me.
Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is David Savage. He's Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. David Savage, thank you for being here.
Hi, Jane.
Walk us through this injunction issued by U.S. District Judge Susan Bolton. What was the essence of her ruling?
Well, the Arizona law had a series of provisions that basically told the local police that if you stop somebody, a lawful stop, you should check to see if that person is a legal resident. If you have some reasonable suspicion that he or she is here illegally, a separate provision said all arrested persons, their immigration status must be checked before they are released. The Justice Department said, basically, immigration is a federal matter. You can't, you Arizona cannot take on the task of enforcing the immigration laws. The judge essentially agreed with the Justice Department and said Arizona cannot essentially enforce the immigration laws this way by turning local arrests into immigration arrests and turning these people over to the feds.
So the power to regulate immigration essentially lies exclusively with the federal government, and this Arizona law, she said, would burden legal aliens, U.S. citizens, and the like.
Yes, that's right. She said that the actual effect of this law would be that a lot of legal immigrants and U.S. citizens would have to go through immigration checks, because she said the way it's written, it says every arrested person. So if a person is arrested for, you name it, drunk driving, they'd have to go through an immigration check. And she said so that would have a burden on a lot of people beyond illegal immigrants.
Here's President Barack Obama in an interview with CBS's Early Show. This was recorded on Friday. He made his case for leaving the regulation of immigration to federal authorities.
We want to work with Arizona. I understand the frustration of the people in Arizona, but what we can't do is demagogue the issue, and what we can't do is allow a patchwork of 50 different states or cities or localities where anybody who wants to make a name for themselves suddenly says, I'm going to be anti-immigrant, and I'm going to try to see if I can solve the problem ourselves. This is a national problem. We've got to have a comprehensive system that not only deals with our border, but also deals with the 11 million undocumented workers who are here, giving them a pathway so that they can actually be citizens here in the United States.
David Savage, how much pressure does this put on the federal government now and the White House to take responsibility for national immigration reform?
Well, there's two ways to answer that question. One is that the federal government says we've got an immigration enforcement policy that says we want to pick up dangerous aliens. That's our priority. We don't want to pick up hundreds of thousands of otherwise law-abiding illegal immigrants who are in the United States. We want to pick up drug traffickers, violent criminals. It would be as if, there are federal narcotics laws, and those laws say that it's a crime to distribute or possess dangerous drugs like cocaine or marijuana. The federal government wouldn't be happy if some state says, we're going to pick up every person we can find for possession of marijuana and turn them over to the U.S. attorney. The federal government would say, thanks, but no thanks. And that's sort of the situation here. The federal government is saying, we don't want all these low-level people. The political question is, yes, you're right. I mean, Congress really should take this on and pass some immigration reform law that sort of sets new rules, but I think most people think that's unlikely to happen anytime soon.
With this injunction, the U.S. District Court essentially struck down every section of the law that the Obama administration cared about. How big of a legal victory was this for the White House, for the Justice Department?
Well, I think on a legal matter, they basically won what they wanted to win, which is to stop this law. It'll go on to the Ninth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit, as previous caller said, is going to hear this probably in November. The Ninth Circuit will rule at some time. The Arizona will then appeal to the Supreme Court, and then we'll see whether the U.S. Supreme Court wants to sort of redraw the boundaries between federal and state enforcement of immigration.
Do you think they will?
I think there's a very good chance the Supreme Court will take this case. This is sort of a legal situation, Jane, where if you looked at the Supreme Court's precedents on immigration going back to the 1940s, and you were a federal district judge, you probably have to say, yes, Arizona can't do this. The Supreme Court had said in the 40s that this is exclusively federal. But the Supreme Court hasn't revisited this topic for decades, so I think there's a good chance the justices are inclined to say, we need to take another look at this, because the states are saying, all we're doing is enforcing the federal law. We're not going beyond federal law. So I think there's a very good chance the Supreme Court would want to take this up.
But might that be years down the road, David, and at least 20 other states in the meantime are carefully watching immigration laws similar to Arizona? What are the repercussions of this one state by state?
Well, I think that's the reason why they will take it up, Jane. I think it's a year or so, maybe not years, but there is another Arizona case up before the court now on employment. This case may, the arrest case may arrive sometime, you know, during this term. And so I think the Supreme Court will do it exactly for the reason you said, that 20 states want to move forward on this, and they need to do a better job of sort of drawing a line between what's federal and what's state.
So if Arizona Governor Brewer and the legislature try to change this law to try to smooth the path through the courts, might that have some impact long term?
I think it might help them. There's a provision in this law that says, I mentioned earlier, that any person arrested must undergo an immigration check before they're released. And the state, the judge says, that means every arrested person. Arizona said, no, 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 we didn't mean that. We meant any person where there's a reason to believe they're illegal. So they may tweak that provision.
We're joined this hour by David Savage, Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. And I'd like now to bring two more voices into the conversation. From Tucson, Arizona, Gabriel Chin joins us. He's a professor of law and co-director of the Criminal Law and Policy Program at the University of Arizona College of Law, an expert on immigration law. Gabriel Chin, thanks for being here.
Hello, Jane.
And joining us from Tustin, California, is John Eastman. He's a professor of law at Chapman University School of Law. He clerked for Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and served as the director of congressional and public affairs at the United States Commission on Civil Rights during the Reagan administration. John Eastman, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me with you today.
Well, before I get your take on this injunction, I'd like to listen last Thursday to some sound from Fox News on the record with Greta Van Susteren. Here's Arizona Governor Jan Brewer speaking about changes that might have been made to Bill 1070 because of concerns raised in the ruling by the U.S. District Judge Susan Bolton.
There is a possibility that we might have to do a little tweaking, and I have been in contact today with the President of the Senate, President Burns, and the Speaker of the House, Speaker Kirk Adams, to get together and determine just exactly what it is maybe that we might be able to do to tweak the bill to give them a little bit more satisfaction.
Gabriel Chin, Professor Chin, I'll start with you. What do you make of Governor Brewer, and more broadly, assess the injunction of the Arizona immigration law?
Well, she's obviously trying to come up with a way to get the heart of SB 1070 back in action, since the injunction took the most important provisions out of it. It's not clear to me that she's going to be able to do that, because the reasons that SB 1070 was enjoined aren't the types of things that can be easily fixed. The problem is, as Section 1 of SB 1070 says, that it's an effort to have a state immigration policy, which the court, the decisions of the Supreme Court says it's impermissible. So I think basically the order is a plain vanilla reading of the Supreme Court's precedents, and it's not going to be easy for the state of Arizona to amend its way around that.
Professor Eastman, what's your take?
Yeah, I disagree with that. I mean, there's one discussion where I think Judge Bolton broadly interpreted the provision of the SB 1070, the one we've been talking about, the requirement that they verify immigration status of everyone who's arrested before they can be released. The state offered a narrowing interpretation of its own statute that put it in the context of the whole section in which that one sentence was pulled out, and that says, what we're talking about are those that we have reasonable suspicion. But you also have to look at the presumptions in that very same section of the statute or other sections of the statute that say if you have a valid Arizona driver's license, the presumption that you're here legally is there. And that would be a verification of the status without overburdening the Department of Homeland Security. And that was the interpretation of its own law that the state of Arizona offered. So I think the legislature can clarify that that more narrow interpretation of its own law is actually the correct one, and then that whole discussion in the opinion goes out the window. So, I do agree though with Professor Chin that other provisions that were struck down, the making it a state law crime for failure to carry immigration papers, those would not be affected by such a change.
So with some of your concerns then of the law, Professor Eastman, how do you think this law might hold up as it moves on to the Ninth Circuit and quite possibly to the United States Supreme Court?
Well, you know, where I disagree most strongly with Professor Chin is that this was just a plain vanilla interpretation of Supreme Court precedent. It's not. It goes much further than the 1941 Hines versus Davidovitz case, which is the key one that everybody's looking at. And it completely ignores a 1976 Supreme Court case in Decanus versus Backer, where the Supreme Court specifically said that the states have some authority to dealing with illegal aliens where their actions parallel federal objectives. And here what Arizona has done with SB 70 is precisely parallel federal statutory law, making it a crime to carry a failure to carry your immigration papers or not have them at all by being here illegally. And not only it doesn't parrot the language of the federal statute, it actually incorporates if your failure to carry papers as required by such and such provision of federal law, then you're subject to exactly the same penalties under state law that you're under federal law. And I think the Supreme Court in 1976 upheld exactly that kind of state action.
Professor Chin, your response.
They did so because in Decanus versus Beka, the court was very clear that the law that they upheld was designed not to regulate immigration, not to drive out immigrants, not to get people to leave, but in a limited way to protect the state's economy. And in that context, they said that limited regulation of the conduct of aliens in the state of California was permissible. This law is very different because, again, Section 1 of SB 1070 says that the point is to drive out aliens who are not lawfully present in the United States. And that, the Supreme Court has never said is permissible for a state to do.
David Savage, jump in here. You're a Supreme Court correspondent for the LA Times. How do you see Supreme Court precedent with this law possibly making it to the high court?
Sounds like a 5-4 decision, Jane. I think there's a good argument on both sides. I think you could read the precedents either way. And I think it's a close call, and I think there's a very good chance that five members of the court would say that if a state is simply enforcing federal law, in other words, not going beyond federal law, not conflicting with federal law, they may be inclined to uphold that.
Let's get some of our callers into this conversation. Here's James. He's up first from Sumter, South Carolina. Hi, James. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. How are you doing?
Fine. Thank you. Go ahead.
My quick point, if I go to a club, there's a bouncer at the door. The bouncer says, are you allowed to be inside? If he decides that I am, I make it in. If I make it past the bouncer and I'm in the club and I'm not a member of that club, they kick me out. I think you get my analogy. My basic point is this. This whole referendum is about drugs and violence. Everybody knows what's going on in Juarez. We have these guys coming over the border. They're pushing their drugs. The police can do nothing about it because they're illegal aliens. My mom works for ICE. She makes the plane tickets to fly these guys back when we bust them. All they do is they fly them back over the border, and then they come right back. We need something real that the police on a local level can handle because no matter how you argue it, there will never be enough federal officials to ensure that all these criminals are not going to make it into our country and do us harm. And in Arizona currently, where I lived seven years, they are doing a lot of harm. So I understand their point.
James, thank you very much. Professor Eastman, your response.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also want to take issue with something President Obama said in the clip you played earlier. He said we can't allow a patchwork of 50 different state laws or cities having their own different immigration policies. But what Arizona has tried to do here is get a handle on the illegal immigration problem in its state simply by more broadly allowing its law enforcement to enforce existing federal law. They've not kind of carved out a whole separate niche of different laws that different than the federal law. If President Obama was actually sincere in what he said about the patchwork, the biggest problem with failure to comply with federal law, creating the patchwork, is the whole sanctuary city movement. Yet I haven't seen the Department of Justice file suit arguing preemption against the actions of sanctuary cities. And I think he is demagoguing the issue for political points when Arizona has simply not just paralleled or gotten close, but actually reiterated the federal statutes.
Professor Chin, respond to caller James's remarks about, you know, this is about drugs and violence. You can hear the frustration in his voice. He lived in Arizona. How do you respond to comments like that?
Well, the evidence that I've seen shows that undocumented non-citizens in the United States commit crimes at the same rate or a lower rate as similarly situated other folks. And so I don't think that this is about crime. And of course, when undocumented non-citizens commit crimes, they can be prosecuted and put in the Arizona courts, just Arizona prisons, just like anybody else. This law, SB 1070, is aimed at people who don't fall into the categories that enable other tools to be used. It's aimed at people who are simply working or simply present.
Here's Richard from Burlington, Vermont. Hi, Richard. Welcome to the program. Hi.
Hi. I find it really pretty difficult to understand how law enforcement agents can be walking down the street and see somebody who is a potentially serious criminal. And I also want to point to the state of Vermont that has a 3% people of color, but in the jails, people of color are 63%. So here in the state of Vermont, things are out of balance, and I would suspect the same thing might be occurring down in Arizona.
So you believe, Richard, this whole thing in Arizona is race-based?
Yes, mm-hmm. I absolutely do believe that. I find it difficult if I walk down a main street in Vermont and an agent stops me. We're only a short way from the Canadian border and asks me to provide my citizenship. Well, I don't have anything. I mean, I got a Social Security card and a driver's license, but that doesn't make me a citizen. And I would be not happy about being stopped.
Richard, thank you. Regardless of how the Arizona law eventually fares in court, Richard's call reminds me of a poll that I read in Arizona out today, which shows that many Arizonans feel the heated immigration debate has actually exposed deeper racism within their communities, that nearly half of Arizonans believe Latinos are more likely to have their legal status questioned than before this law went into effect. I mean, how do you see the social impact of this debate, Professor Chin?
Well, it's definitely made things less pleasant in the state of Arizona. It's divided people. It's created controversy. I think there's more suspicion and less trust. I think it is an issue that really had to be put on the front burner, and SB 1070 has accomplished that. It's put this on the national agenda, and hopefully there can be some constructive policy made in Washington. But in the meantime, it's painful.
John Eastman, will this injunction soften the anti-immigrant sentiment that seems to be percolating within Arizona?
No, I think it's going to heighten it. I was at an immigration conference in Phoenix over the weekend. There was a memorial service on Friday night. A broad, diverse group of every race and color and national origin there, all supporting SB 1070. So the notion that this movement is kind of has racist roots, I think, is just preposterously wrong. Are there some law enforcement officers who are going to stop somebody because of the color of their skin? Undoubtedly, we find government officials make those kind of mistakes all the time. But is that what's driving this? No. The large number of illegal immigrants, and you cannot be down along the border there and not see what's going on and realize that something has to be done about it, whether it's the murders that are going on ranches near the border, or the trashing of our environment there, or the drain on social services. Something has got to be done. And when the federal government is not stepping up in a full enough way to get a handle on it, the notion that they would reject the offer from a state to add law enforcement resources more broadly to this to handle this problem is rather bizarre, it seems to me.
David Savage, jump in. Your thoughts?
Well, that's really the issue that Congress needs to wrestle with, which is, do we want a national effort to take into custody and deport more illegal immigrants whether they are criminals or not? Or do we need some sort of national effort to legalize people who are here and are working and are acting as good citizens? That's a big political debate, a big political issue, and that's really what needs to be decided. Do we want to try to rid the country of illegal immigrants, or do we want to find a way to make them legal residents and legal citizens?
Here is John, listener from New Haven, Connecticut. Hi, John. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Hi. Well, go ahead.
Well, again, my point somewhat agrees with the last caller saying, two callers ago, saying if my friends and I were driving in a foreign country, we were visiting, and I committed a traffic infraction or something, and we were pulled over, and I could maybe speak the local language, but haltingly, and nobody in the car could produce valid ID or a driver's license, I'm sure that police officer in another country would check us out. Because we can't prove we're there legally. We can't prove we're operating our car legally. The caller before who said he doesn't have proof of citizenship. Every driver's license in America proves citizenship because you have to show a U.S. birth certificate. That's part of the Homeland Security provisions after 9/11. Driver's licenses prove U.S. citizenship. Illegal immigrants can't get them. And so police officers on the spot can say, here's a car full of people who don't speak English well or not at all, and none of them can produce identification or a driver's license. I have reasonable suspicion, regardless of the color of their skin, they could be speaking Norwegian, and that police officer can make a valid determination that's not race-based, that these people need further investigation.
All right, John, thank you. There's a supporter of the Arizona law. Here's Bob with another perspective from Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Bob. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I want to point out the two false dichotomies that the conversation is based upon. One is that it is our land in the first place, as if possession were 9/10 of a moral matter and not, and that there isn't any theirs, T-H-E-I-R-S. What if First Nation people had sent European illegal aliens home like the Arizona law would do to today's illegal aliens? The second distinction is between First Nation peoples and European peoples. So that was familial relation. We were all genetic. Yeah. Hello?
I hear you, Bob. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Professor Chin, what do you make of the timing of this ruling, regardless of the outcome? Why did it take so long?
Because the judge really spent a lot of time explaining what her reasoning was very carefully. It's a long, thorough opinion that goes into a lot of detail. So it did take a long time. I also want to add that even before SB 1070, Arizona police have been deeply involved in immigration enforcement. So that's not the question about SB 1070. Arizona police have 287G agreements, which means that they work with the federal government to deport criminal aliens. Arizona police cooperate with Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and Customs Enforcement when they do a traffic stop. They frequently turn people over to federal authorities, even without SB 1070, if it turns out that they're undocumented. SB 1070 isn't about cooperation, local cooperation with the federal government. It's about the local governments having the authority to prosecute undocumented people and put them in their own prisons, which is a very different thing.
We're joined this hour by John Eastman, professor of law at Chapman University, also by Gabriel Chin, law professor at the University of Arizona, and by David Savage, Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. David Savage, I'll begin this segment with you. A next step for the controversial Arizona law, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Help us understand the makeup of that court and how this law might be received there.
Well, the first question probably is, if I knew what three-judge panel is going to hear the case, I could probably tell you, as John Eastman or Gabriel Chin, I could tell you how it's going to come out. It's a divided court, some very strong liberals, very strong conservatives. It leans to the liberal side. Mm-hmm. The conventional wisdom would be that the Ninth Circuit is going to affirm, essentially uphold the judge's order and say that the Arizona law cannot go into effect. Arizona probably expects they're going to lose in the Ninth Circuit and then appeal to the Supreme Court.
Professor Eastman, do you think that this injunction will withstand an appeal to the Ninth Circuit?
Yeah, I agree with the first half of David's comment that depends on who the panel we get is. But the Ninth Circuit has actually upheld a couple of immigration-related cases coming out of Arizona and elsewhere that would suggest that they would uphold the Arizona law and overturn the injunction. If you get a panel of the more hardline left-of-center people on the court, then I wouldn't support wouldn't believe that to be true. But most of the middle of the court and certainly the folks on the right of the court, I think, would reverse this decision. There are some fairly serious errors just in the application of injunction law, a facial challenge law, preemption law, and also some misstatements about what the federal law actually requires. Any one of those things would be grounds enough to reverse this injunction.
Professor Chin, how do you see the Ninth Circuit?
I think the Ninth Circuit is going to affirm the heart of what Judge Bolton did here. And I am not sure that either in the Ninth Circuit or in the Supreme Court that it's a liberal-conservative issue, because conservative justices historically have been among the strongest on this particular issue in supporting federal authority. The federal supremacy over immigration is based on things like deference to federal administrative agencies, deference to prosecutorial discretion, deference to federal judgments about what is necessary for foreign policy. And so if you look at Justice Scalia, for example, even Justice Thomas, who, of course, Dean Eastman knows far better than I do, their jurisprudence, you could write a brief to the Ninth Circuit, you could write a brief to the Supreme Court, basically using their opinions.
And Professor Chin, it's not a foregone conclusion that if, in fact, the Supreme Court gets this case, hears this case, that it will necessarily be a better place for defenders of this law. I mean, conservative justices have championed federal powers with regard to immigration in the past, no?
Exactly. Exactly.
And so how do you see a Supreme Court ruling here? You don't necessarily agree with David Savage that it might be a 5-4 case.
Well, it might be a 5-4 case. I can't predict for sure. But what I can say is that the most conservative justices historically have been the ones who said, look, we can't interfere in federal policy here because, A, the consequences could be dramatic, and B, how can we evaluate the seriousness of the foreign policy claims made by the executive? How do we evaluate them saying we need to do this action with regard to some immigrants in order to get a particular treaty through negotiated? How is a court supposed to say, well, you know, that treaty actually isn't very important, so we're going to interfere? They've said we can't get involved, and the courts in evaluating the wisdom of federal policies in this area, and this to me seems no different.
Let's bring back our many callers who are waiting. Jim is in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hi, Jim. Welcome.
Hi. I just want to ask, isn't there a better way to go about this? I mean, why doesn't Arizona have a go after employers? Why don't they consider asking employers to show documentation for all their workers, and then they could arrest, jail, and fine employers that were out of compliance? I think that would send shockwaves to the business community and end this overnight, because illegal immigrants won't come over if there's no job. And that might avoid this sort of anti-American Nazi Gestapo show me your papers thing on the street.
Jim, thank you. Let's turn it to Professor Chin. What about that? Going after employers, is that a solution?
Well, the problem is that the 1986 Immigration Reform and Control Act took away a lot of the power of states to regulate employment of documented and undocumented workers. And so there's really very little leeway that states have to do that. There's an exception that states are allowed to consider business licensing in the context of business licensing, whether a business hires undocumented workers. But it's a pretty narrow exception, and there's not a lot of room for state enforcement in that area.
David Savage, you agree?
Well, that's actually exactly the issue before the Supreme Court this fall. Arizona, when Janet Napolitano was governor, passed a law that basically some people call the business death penalty, that if you're an employer and you repeatedly and knowingly hire illegal immigrants, you can lose your business license. The Chamber of Commerce challenged that law and said, look, Congress said in 1986 states can't regulate employment. And so and Arizona said, all we're doing is taking away their licenses. That's a state matter. So that's the issue before the Supreme Court in this fall. That is, can Arizona take away the business licenses of employers and get tough on employers, or did Congress already knock out that weapon in the 1986 law?
Hmm. Here's David. Professor Eastman, go ahead. Sure.
Yeah, can I point out one of the provisions? I mean, I think it's important we also focus on what Judge Bolton upheld here. And one of the provisions of SB 1070 that was upheld is adding some prohibitions on the knowing employment of illegal immigrants, adding requirements for checking eligibility for illegal immigrants. There's another provision that created a separate state crime for the transport and harboring of illegal immigrants, and all of those were upheld. So there is much in this law that already has the state dealing with illegal immigration in some fashion, and those parts of SB 1070 were upheld by Judge Bolton.
Hi, David. Welcome to On Point, calling from Clear Lake, Minnesota. Welcome.
Yeah, it's actually Clear Lake, Iowa.
Okay. Sorry for our mistake. Go ahead.
My mistake. Okay. My point is that I've been married to a lady for 6 years, and she's now in Mexico waiting on permission to get back into the country. And she has her family down there in Michoacan. Mm-hmm. But now it would be certainly nice if my wife could rejoin me, being that we've been married for 6 years. But the paperwork process has been so slow. They claim there's 2,200 applicants daily trying to get in legally, and that the process is just taking forever. I've waited now 13 months. And they said, do not email us anymore until 13 months has expired. Then we will contact you regarding your wife's status.
And so, David, what's your take on the Arizona law and the injunction that just passed this last week?
My take on the Arizona law is the people are coming into the United States to work because they haven't got anything in Mexico. So if we could offer them work and have them identified. See, I think that's the biggest problem with them creating medical bills is that they have no identity. They have no license. They have no Social Security, no way to send them a bill.
David, thanks. Here's Barbara from Bridgehampton, New York. Hi, Barbara. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. Well, go ahead.
I was wondering, maybe this might be a better idea. What if we made everybody legal? Then we could take and charge them taxes, and wouldn't that help our Social Security, our national debt, and all the other things that they're draining right now?
So what if we made a system where everyone was required to pay taxes? Okay, Professor Chin, what do you make of Barbara's idea?
Well, many of them do pay taxes, and under federal law, they don't get benefits. And so that's one of the ways in which the so-called immigration surplus, the economic benefit to the United States for having immigrants plays out. Obviously, there's costs and benefits on both sides, and the net effect is debated. But certainly there are substantial contributions to the Social Security system from undocumented workers.
And Professor Eastman.
Yeah, I mean, the notion, though, that they're not drawing benefits, if we're not allowed to ask whether they're here legally or illegally, I mean, many draw benefits illegally because we're not asking whether they're here legally or illegally. And what Arizona is trying to do is try and find out, are you here legally or illegally? We tried the amnesty option in 1986. It didn't work. The enforcement that was promised never followed. And by allowing amnesty in 86, you created this huge magnet for people to say, well, they did it once. They'll probably do it again. So we can ignore the law, get into the United States one way or another, and eventually it'll so overwhelm the system, they'll give us another amnesty. And if we do that, the magnet will grow even larger for the next round. I think that's what people are seeing different this time than in 1986.
Let's go to Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Ike. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. Mm-hmm. Look, this is an economic issue as well as an illegal issue, okay? For them to be here in the first place, they break our law. They break our law illegally entering. They break the law by stealing identities. They break the law by not registering for the draft, which everyone's supposed to do. Also, the other problem that we have here, besides the idea that they decimated the construction business, which has caused a lot of Americans to either lose their work or lose their wage structure, the other part of the problem we have here is, for some reason, the 14th Amendment's being interpreted that if you can get here and you can have a baby on our soil, the child, whether you're here legally or not, automatically becomes a U.S. citizen. And that's not the way that I read the 14th Amendment. Look, in Charleston, South Carolina, they passed a law. Every employer has to e-verify every employee. And I think that's what we need to do across this country and across the board, because it's a security and an economic warfare issue.
Ike, thank you. Here's Juan in Montreal, Canada. Glad you called, Juan. Hello.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Me, I'm not a constitutional expert. I'm not a lawyer. I can't really talk about the minutiae of it all. But all I was wondering was, if capital can move freely from Resolute Bay to the Isthmus of Tehuantepec, why can't we find a humane and non-bigoted solution to the free movement of workers on this continent?
Juan, thank you. Professor Eastman, what do you think?
Well, Congress is certainly trying to do that. The question is, while they try and find the solution, do we just ignore the existing law? And there are too many people that are routinely flouting the existing law. And I think the threat to the very notion of the rule of law is very serious. And I think what Arizona is trying to do kind of parallels in a small way what Rudy Giuliani did in New York. You start with enforcing whatever violations there are, the small ones as well as the big ones, and restore the notion of compliance with the law as the baseline from which our discussion about how we change the law in the future to increase illegal immigration, to streamline the process for people who are patiently waiting in line as the spouse of the earlier caller did, so that it is possible to come here legally, lawfully, as fellow citizens, subscribing to the great principles of the free market and liberty that made our country great. But don't start off by violating the law to get here.
Professor Chin, let me go back to Ike's call and the question of workers and employment, because Americans who compete with illegal immigrants for jobs, with no more than a high school education, have the highest rates of unemployment in this country. And in Arizona, almost one in five of these less educated Americans is out of work. How do you respond to Ike and those who have similar concerns?
There's no question that there's competition between native workers and immigrant workers, but I think the caller from Canada made an excellent point. If the wage structure in Mexico is lower than it is here, then either capital or labor is going to move, and the inexorable economic forces that say that utility maximizing business people are going to try and get their work done at the cheapest level possible. There's no way to avoid that, and if Mexican workers are cheaper, which they are, there's going to be some way found to capture that available benefit, and it could be by sending work there or bringing workers here.
Professor Chin, Professor Eastman, I asked David Savage this question earlier in the hour. I'd like to hear your comments as we wrap up here. At least 20 other states are considering immigration laws similar to Arizona's, watching this Arizona case very closely. What are the repercussions of SB 1070 state by state? Professor Chin?
Well, obviously, it's been one of the most successful legal ideas, particularly legal ideas to come out of the academy in years. This is extremely popular. People ask the question, why can't states enforce federal law? I think more states will adopt it, and there's likely to be a Supreme Court test, and the Supreme Court, I think, is likely to say that states can't enforce federal law because the Constitution creates a separation of powers and a federalism, that some things are for the states, some things are for the federal government, some things are both, and foreign policy, border control, immigration regulation is in the design of the framers. exclusively for the federal government.
Professor Eastman, about 20 seconds left for you.
Sure. I disagree. I think the Supreme Court's going to uphold what Arizona did here. By enforcing federal law, they are giving additional resources to a huge problem that is affecting their state as well as the nation. And the states have some sovereign authority here, and the Supreme Court has recognized that in the past. And I think the relevant decision people need to look to is 1976 in the DeCanis case, because I think that's where a majority of the court is right now. And I'd be very surprised if the Arizona law is struck down by this court.
David Savage, in our last 20 seconds, wrap us up here with the implications long-term of SB 1070.
Well, this is a great national debate, as you can see, is whether we're going to allow states to move forward and enforce the immigration laws. And I think the Supreme Court will tell us that in a year or so.
David Savage, Gabriel Chin, John Eastman, great panel. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jane.
And thanks. You can continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can always follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.